What year do you think this is?
Welcome to episode 398 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Richard, like, this feels like such a weird week. A, it feels like it ought to be, like, Friday by now, and our mix of news is a little weird, and... But there's some, I don't know, like, we're creeping up on 400, but it's not going to happen when we want it to. Like, everything just feels weird tonight.
It does feel weird. And the other thing is that we really have no clue how long the show is going to be.
Nope. There's not a ton of individual stories here, but some of them could lead to some ranting, I think, maybe. So why don't we...
I sense a challenge.
And I've got maybe a surprise jab at you later. So why don't we dig in to our feedback this week? It did not come into us via email. Instead, this was from Twitter. This is from a user named Lithium on Twitter. He says, "Hey there, I've been out of the game for a while since I gave up on Media Center and went to Dish. The Dish Hopper is fantastic, but..."
Okay, you're way past 140 characters.
This was a direct message.
Okay, good. Thank you for clarifying. I was like, what is this, like 7 or 10 messages or something?
Oh, yeah, this would be a lot of tweets. All right, so he says, "The Dish Hopper is fantastic, but the price keeps going up." Yeah, that's kind of what they do. "I'm leaning toward trying over the air and streaming. I'm about 60 miles from Boston, so the channels might be limited. I'm thinking of getting the longest range outdoor antenna I can find and a silicon dust tuner. I was surprised to see the Silicon Dust products still only have 2 tuners. Is this the best option? Any idea if it's worth going to the HD Home Run Extend? I have a wired network throughout the house. I plan to use Plex and Rokus. Any suggestions for the best range antenna? Thank you for the help." So the very first thing that I want to say is thank you for giving us so many details. He told us roughly how far away from the city is. He told us about his network setup. He told us about, you know, the different devices on his network. This is the way to ask a question. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So I'm going to go in reverse order and say, for antenna suggestions, I don't live that far away, so I don't have a great suggestion there. Richard might, but what I always tell anybody when it comes to antenna shopping is start with the website called Antenna Web. You put in your address and it'll show you exactly how far you are from all of your neighboring towers and what channels you can expect to get and what types of antennas you're going to need to get those specific channels. Because maybe there's a couple of channels that you don't care about that are even further away, and there's no reason to get a giant antenna if you don't care about those channels. So start there. You want to start with as much information as you can possibly get. An Antenna Web is a great place to get started. Richard, you live kind of far away from your city. What antenna is it that you have? And roughly how far are you?
See, you're giving me way more credit than I deserve here, because you're suggesting that I actually know what brand antenna I bought. I do not. I bought something that was supposedly long range and supposedly worked in an attic and was relatively inexpensive on Amazon. And for the most part, it works on those stations that are aligned. It's directional. The one that I have is directional. And so I had to choose which of the two possible directions I could target so that I got the channels that were most important to me. Because of course they don't all come from the same place. My target is Baltimore, and that's roughly 30 miles away from me. So it's half of what this listener is trying to achieve.
So your antenna probably isn't going to cut it anyway. So I guess it doesn't really matter that you can't remember what it is that's in your attic.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, so I guess start there and Yeah, I can't really give you any better suggestions than that. Now on to your tuner question. I do think the Silicon Dust products are the way to go. The HD Home Run tuners are really good. They're rock solid. Wasn't it just last episode, or maybe this was in a personal conversation I was having? I was talking with someone who, oh no, I know what it was. I was listening to Dave McCabe's show Reset, and he was talking about how for the Super Bowl, he drug out some old, like those really ugly plasticky light gray HD Home Run tuners. He pulled those suckers out. I mean, those things have got to be pushing 10 years old. And they
I run in my attic.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, that
still works.
That's a testament to how good these Silicon Dust HD Home Run tuners are. Now, should you go for the Extend? The Extend is the model that supports transcoding. That's what makes it a lot more expensive. It's about $180 compared to the Connect, which is roughly 100-ish. We're talking Amazon prices here. The difference is the Extend has all of this onboard processing that can take that live feed coming over your antenna and then actually compress it down to an H.264 compressed MPEG-4 stream, which is way more friendly if you're trying to stream to other devices like phones and tablets and things like that, especially if you need to do that over Wi-Fi. Now, I would say that a couple years ago when that product came out, this was a lot more of a problem. Nowadays, with the Wi-Fi networks that we have now, I'm not sure that this is as much of an issue. I have one of these Extends, and I did have the transcoding stuff turned on. I don't know if I still do, but I have no problem using the Allman 3 network in my house, watching stuff all day long over Wi-Fi on my Android phone and my tablets and stuff. So I
just want to kind of weigh in there. I mean, I agree that this is probably less of a problem on those kinds of robust networks. But you have to remember that these mesh network systems are relatively new. I mean, most of them have really hit within the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that a lot of our listeners would actually be using something like that. So it may still be necessary for someone, depending on what kind of network system they have.
Exactly. That is very true. But the other thing is, if you're not planning to stream, and this only matters if you're planning to stream live TV, because that's all this tuner is doing. It's transcoding the live TV stream. If you don't care about that at all, then I don't see a big reason to get one. You know, if you're only planning to watch over wired connections, and or you're only going to be recording to something that's wired on your network, then it's not necessary. But if you want to be streaming wirelessly, that's where the Extend can really come in handy. So that's how I would decide, because it is a pretty big jump in price. I mean, you're looking at close to twice the price just to get that transcoding functionality. But you can't really go wrong with either of those tuners.
Yeah, they're great products.
All right, well, that's it for our feedback this week. So let's jump into our video news.
Yeah, before we leave that, I think we should mention feedback can normally be sent to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. In this case, rather creative. I don't know if this has ever happened before. Lithium on Twitter decided to get in touch with us through our open DM channel. And so if you want to do that, you can reach out to us at DG Media Zone on Twitter, DIGI Media Zone.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, our first video topic is about our favorite topic on this show, Josh.
Windows Media Center?
What year do you think this is? Plex. I'm talking about Plex, of course. Oh, man. Well, anyway, that's my favorite video app that I use on many platforms, including my Xbox One. And if you've been using the Plex DVR, you should probably get the latest version of Plex, because they have finally merged the DVR beta into their main development branch. Now, what that means is that if you have not been able to get all of the latest fixes and features and improvements that they've been working on for the last 4 or 5 months, because you've been a Plex DVR beta user, no longer is that a problem for you. Now, this is part of the releases that will be coming with each Plex update. So go to the Plex site, get the latest update, and in addition to some fixes for the DVR, so there's essentially like Plex Beta 5 at this point, you'll see that there's some improvements for the movies and music and photos. And this is the release that includes all of the magic tagging capabilities for photos and everything else. And by the release, I mean, this is the main branch. This is the main product that they've been releasing. And as DVR users, we haven't had access to those new features. So this is a great thing. Now, I will say that when I updated, I had a glitch or two. I had a period where Plex server stalled on me and I had to restart the machine. And then I had some problems with content recognition on, no, not content recognition, sorry, with the lineup of my recordings not showing up. And I thought, oh, well, okay, maybe since they merged it into the main branch, I have to set up my recordings again instead of just carrying it forward. But after resetting it and playing with it a little while, they showed up. So I don't know what was going on there, but it's a fairly, you know, with a couple of reboots, a fairly painless upgrade. And I'm glad to see this part of the main product right now, because as I mentioned before, this is my main DVR these days.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, maybe this is a little bit more in the what's going on in our entertainment center scenario, but I'm not using the DVR from Plex as much. I'm combining the HD Home Run DVR with Plex libraries because they're both running on the same machine. Mm-hmm. So I've set up a Plex library over top of my HD Home Run recorded folder. So that's how I'm managing them. I'm mixing them together.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I'm doing something similar. And again, we'll definitely talk about that when we get to our entertainment center updates.
Cool. All right, well, sticking with the video news, we've got one more story. This is even more on the Windows side. Windows on your Xbox, that is, because Kodi, you know, one of the other, probably the other mainline branch from the original XBMC, is they had a fairly large announcement at Microsoft's big developer event last week, and that was that they are working on a UWP version of their Kodi app. You know, Kodi is similar to Plex. Kodi, you know, they both came from XBMC. Kodi kind of went down, you know, while Plex is the, this is the interface you get, this is how we think it should work. Kodi is the, here's the interface that you can start with, now tweak it to your heart's content, for better or for worse.
Yeah, the furthest in that direction. I mean, between MB and Kodi, I think Kodi is probably the one that has the most granular configuration capabilities.
Right. So there are some huge, huge Kodi fans out there. And many of them have been, you know, shouting from the rooftops that they want it on their Xbox. And I don't blame them. If you're a Kodi fan, I would absolutely want it on my Xbox. And that's what they're working on. Now, they don't have any dates here, but they're working on it. And some of you rather astute listeners out there will be saying, But Josh and Richard, isn't Kodi already a Windows app? It's in the Windows Store already. And that's true. It is in the Windows Store right now on Windows 10 PCs. But to do that, what they did is they used a tool called Project Centennial, which allows people to take regular Windows desktop apps and kind of wrap them up in a UWP. And that's how you get them into the store. And that's cool and that's fine on a PC, but that doesn't work on the Xbox. On the Xbox, it's got to be a real UWP for it to work. So they are working on that. They didn't mention if the UWP will also work on Windows 10 Mobile. My guess is probably not based on limited user base there, but I don't know for sure. And again,
yeah,
no dates given yet. Really no idea even how to guess how long this might take those guys to get it out. But it's good news regardless.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Glad to hear it.
So let's move on to some audio news. And as usual, our audio news is about Microsoft's Groove Music app. they roll out updates to Groove all the time on Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile. And while the app is on Android and iOS, those platforms don't see updates as frequent, but they have finally released an update in the last week or so. We've gotten a fairly big update to bring it more in line with what we have on the Windows platforms. And basically, what they've done is brought over a bunch of their exploration, you know, music discovery type features. You know, if you select a genre now, when going through the explore menus, you're going to find better options there. You're going to find, you know, relevant artists, and you're going to find albums for different genres and songs for different genres. If you go to a genre page, they've got the radio station option to just say, play me music in this genre. All of this is fairly standard features. Like this seems like table stakes for this type of app, but Groove on Android and iOS isn't at the same level as it is on Windows. And you might argue that it's not at the same level as many of their competitors in some ways, but they're working on it, and it's definitely getting better. Unfortunately, I'm still someone who doesn't really use this much. I will use Groove even on Android if I want to listen to my own personal music collection. But since I'm a Spotify subscriber, that's just not very often for me. Do you find, Richard, I know you are a Spotify subscriber, but how often do you find yourself listening to your own music collection?
Well, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I finished ripping the music collection and repositioning the rips that I already had onto my new, quote, new Windows Home server. And so I have been listening to my content a lot more, but the stuff that I want to listen to through Groove just gets synced for me through my iHome server, server that I run on Windows Server, with my iTunes library, and that gets synced with iTunes Match. And so everything that I want, even if I bought it through Groove, is just available to me on my native iTunes app that I have. So while I have Groove content, I don't really ever use the Groove app. I do still use the Spotify app a lot, actually, for discovering content or for listening to a particular album that I don't have. I will say, if you're a Windows user, I'm wondering if it makes more sense to look at Groove, because weren't we talking recently that Spotify still doesn't have a native UWP?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah. So on the Xbox, there's no officially supported way of listening to Spotify. And on Windows, you have to just download the regular Windows app.
And that's crazy.
It is. I really, really wish they would get with the program and make a UWP, because I would love me some Spotify on the Xbox.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I have Spotify on my friggin' TiVo.
Yeah, it's on everything. It's on everything except for the Xbox. I don't remember if they're on PlayStation or not. I mean, before the UWP stuff hit the Xbox One, I just assumed it was Microsoft not really wanting to work with the Spotify guys to let the app on the platform. But now that anybody can submit a UWP, there's nothing stopping Spotify from making one. They could absolutely do it. They just don't. And it makes me sad. Very sad.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that's it for our audio news. Let's move on to just a little bit of gaming news again. All of you people who don't like the gaming news have been loving the last couple of weeks, because it's going to be light again tonight. The first and main story in the gaming segment is, and this is actually, by the time you're hearing this, this might be 2 weeks old, but this wasn't a site that I used frequently. It's a site called True Achievements, and they've got a new feature that I think, even if you're not into achievements, which is why I wasn't familiar with this site, you might want to check this site out. Again, it's called True Achievements. The whole purpose of this site previously had been about you sign in, you give it your Xbox Live gamer tag, and it tracks all of the games and all of the achievements that you've got for them, and gives you all sorts of fun, cool reporting stuff. You can compare it with friends. It's really powerful and cool functionality if you're into really tracking achievements. That's not me. What's new and is really awesome, though, is they've now integrated the Xbox Store in many different and very useful ways right into the site. So now you can say, look up Forza Horizon 3, maybe, and it will show you all of the information that it can pull from the Xbox Store, like the price. And I know what you're thinking. What do I need the price for? It's $60. I know that. Okay, maybe you did know that. But what about all the DLC? Do you know how much that winter expansion pack for Forza Horizon 3 is? I wasn't sure. It's $20, by the way. I wasn't sure, though. And it lists it. It lists all of the DLC and how much it is. That's okay. But it gets even better than that. You can have wish list. This is something that the Xbox has been needing forever and doesn't have. You can go in, find the things that you want, add them to a wish list. Wish lists are great for keeping track of the things that you want, but it's still not everything. What we really want to know, right? This is, for all you Steam gamers, you know exactly how this works. There's a game you're kind of interested in, but you don't want to pay full price, so you throw it on your wish list, you wait for a sale, Steam tells you when it's on sale, and that's when you buy the game. We want
so
all
you
that.
Need a notification exactly. when it's on sale.
Exactly. We want all of that on the Xbox One, but Microsoft isn't giving it to us. TrueAchievements.com is. You can now make wish list, and even if it's not like wish list typey stuff, you can get notifications on sale items of whatever you want, whether it's a game, whether it's a piece of DLC. You can set it to notify you anytime the price changes at all, or you can set thresholds like, maybe you want that $20 piece of DLC, but you're only willing to pay up to $10. You can put a $10 threshold on it, and it'll only send you a notification if it gets at or below $10. I'm pretty excited about this. Like, this is going to make it so much easier to keep track of the Xbox content that I want. So that is all at the site trueachievements.com. Go and check that out if you haven't yet. I think you're really gonna like that functionality.
That's really cool stuff.
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't know how in 2017 the Xbox still doesn't support this stuff. It seems like simple functionality.
Well, because they want you to buy it now. They don't want you to wait.
I guess, but this model's been working out really well for Steam. Steam makes buckets of money on games. Buckets and buckets and buckets. All right. So maybe you only buy games when they're on sale. And hey, fortunately, that means every week there's new games on sale. And that's no different this week in the Deals with Gold and Spotlight sale. This week's publisher that has put a bunch of their stuff on sale is 2K. And there's two games that I found that really stuck out to me as good deals. There's actually a few good deals, but it's stuff that we've seen a lot in the past. But these two really stood out. The first one is Final Fantasy 15, one maybe the biggest RPG that was released last fall. It's down to $39. It's not the biggest sale ever, but it's the biggest sale I've seen for this game digitally so far. And then the other one is Mafia 3. This is another game that came out just last fall. This is only like a 3-month-old game. It's half off. It's $30. This game is like 30-plus hours of gameplay. That's a pretty good dollar to hour ratio for a video game.
Have you played this one?
I've not. I've never actually played any of the Mafia games, but I heard really, really good things about this one. Obviously, they're all focused around Mafia, and you are part of the Mafia. And this one, the setting and characters in this one is really interesting because it takes place in the New Orleans area in like, I don't remember, I think it's the 60s time frame, and you're an African American in the South in the Mafia. And I've heard that the storytelling and the situations of the game are really, really intriguing because of the scenarios that type of situation sets up. So I've heard really good things about this. There's just too many other games on my list that I want to play. So I won't be picking this up, but if you have any interest at all, this is a great time to pick it up because by now you've probably, if you're not like me, you've probably made your way through most of the holiday games that you picked up. So now is time to start picking up some of the ones you missed. And those are two great ones to pick up because you'll spend a lot of hours on both of those games.
Okay, well, how about if the games that were available were free? Would you get them then?
Probably, especially the Xbox One Game with Gold this month. This month. You can't even call them this month because of the screwy schedule.
this half of the month and first half of next month or whatever it is.
Yeah, there's not good wording for that. We need better vocabulary to describe games with gold. On the Xbox One for this time period.
Mid-month. We'll call it mid-month. Sure. This mid-month.
It's Project Cars. I love, love, love this racing game. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I love it. It's free. You should get it if you're into racing games at all, but especially if you're into sim racing games. I'm going to include a link in here to a thread on Reddit. There's something very, very important about Project Cars. It doesn't, like, it's a sim, but it does not drive the way Forza Motorsport drives. It's different. And for a lot of people, they pick it up and they're like, whoa, I can't control this. I'm putting a link in the show notes for recommendations on how to change the controller settings to make it drive a little bit easier. Otherwise, you're going to spend multiple hours trying to get used to how to control the cars in Project Cars. And trust me, it's worth it, but it is very different. So I'll pass along a few tips on how to configure your controller. If you're using a steering wheel, it probably doesn't matter. I think it's probably going to be fine, but I don't have a wheel on the Xbox One, so I don't know for sure. The other game that's free, the Xbox 360 game, it's Star Wars The Force Unleashed. And this one is easy. It's just for the rest of February. And of course, all of these games with gold are backwards compatible. So if you've got an Xbox One, you can grab both of these for free right now.
And that is it for our Microsoft-specific news in this episode. But we do have some industry news. Two things, actually. You noticed that the new Comcast app is going to be available soon.
Yeah, this story comes to us from our pals over at Engadget. And I don't have a lot of firsthand experience with this. I don't live in a Comcast area. Despite the fact that Comcast is all over the country, I don't live in a Comcast area. So I've never gotten to use the Xfinity systems, the Xfinity boxes and all that stuff. But from what I've heard, they've gotten pretty decent over the last couple of years. And they've got a new version of their Xfinity Stream app that's coming out at the end of the month, February 28th, to be specific. This app actually sounds really good, guys. Like, we've spent, how long have we been doing the show? All of those years, railing on what the cable industries have been giving us for apps. But they've started to get better over the last couple of years. And this one sounds like they're finally releasing the vast majority of the shackles that they've put into these types of apps. Now, you can use this app on your mobile devices to watch live streaming TV. And it's not just at home, it's out and about too. If you're at work or anywhere else, you can stream your live Comcast TV over your mobile device. That's awesome. You also get remote DVR access. They almost always leave out the DVR stuff, but not in the new Xfinity Stream app. They're also going to have music channels. They're going to have all of the integrated guide stuff in there for you to find stuff to watch live and record. If you're a Spanish speaker, they're going to have a Spanish guide option on there. And then the other thing is that this app is the app that you'll use with their service that they're currently calling Stream TV. That is it's essentially their like Dish, their Sling TV competitor, PlayStation View, all of those types of just over the internet paid TV subscription options. Comcast is working on one. It's currently called Stream TV. I believe it's currently only available in Boston while they're testing this out. And they did say in this article that Comcast is planning to change the name of Stream TV to something else so that it's not so confusing that they've got this service called Stream TV and this app called Stream, and you don't need both of them to do everything. But for Stream TV, you need the Stream app. But if you've just got regular cable, you can use the Stream app. And yeah, so they're going to actually do the logical thing and change the name of one of those services. Richard, this all sounds really good. Like, we have been talking for years about how terrible the pay TV providers in this country have been about giving us good apps that we want to use, and that being one of the large justifications for why we need things like cable card. And the cable industry has been saying, no, it's okay, guys, seriously, we've got apps and they're going to do what you want and you're going to like them. And previously we've been like, psh, no, these are terrible. This one doesn't look so terrible.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, from everything that I've read, the Xfinity product is pretty good. They've created a fairly good user experience. Now, specifically, let's clarify this. Specifically here, we're talking about the mobile stream app. This may or may not be the same app that is going to be available for streaming set-top or set-side boxes. So if you have, for example, a Roku, and you heard us talking a couple of weeks ago, or more accurately, you heard me ranting a couple of weeks ago, that Comcast is coming out with a system that will allow you to run basically your Comcast Xfinity experience on the Roku. And that's great. In some ways, it's not going to save you a whole lot of money, but it is good that it gives you the ability to use a box that you already have. What we're talking about here is that they're making the content available on streaming. And the thing that makes this or break this, because by now, I think most companies have figured out how to design the experience. I think the thing that makes this or breaks this is the content availability. And you mentioned this when we talked about this last, is that this is often encumbered by licensing agreements. Mm-hmm. So the big question that I have is, will Comcast be able to secure the licensing rights that they need to make all of their content available to users in this mobile experience? And I hope they really push to get as much as they can. They have something of an advantage because they actually, you know, they know some people at one of the major networks.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, I mean, like, are you going to be able to watch The Walking Dead live outside of your home using this app? Like, AMC is a really great example of that, right?
Yep.
AMC makes all of this complicated on Sling TV with their different regulations for what can be recorded and when and for how long and all this stuff. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Has Comcast been able to force the content owners to bend to their very large will because they control so much of the pay TV market share in the United States that hopefully they were able to use some of that size to benefit the consumer?
And there you get into that very risky territory of, oh, is a monopoly kind of throwing their weight around? But this is one of those areas where you kind of hope that they're using their size, kind of like Apple did back in the days of digital music getting started, to kind of force the hand of the content providers to make their content available the way consumers want it.
Yeah, exactly. So here's hoping. We'll find out at the end of the month, I guess. Well, we'll have to hear secondhand, I suppose, since neither of us have Comcast.
All right. Well, if you're still trying to figure out how to get all the services that you want on your TV and how to wade through all of that, there is some interesting news from a product called, I think it's pronounced Kavo. I don't know if that's the right pronunciation, but the Kavo streaming box was demonstrated this week at the Code Conference. Now, if you're not familiar with that, this is essentially the next generation of what was formerly known as the D Conference. This is all the people from the Journal. I think it was the Journal, wasn't it? Yeah, Wall Street Journal, that ended up leaving and starting Recode. And at Recode now, they have the annual Code Conference. And this is really kind of the cream of the crop of major companies in the tech space, as well as some interesting new startups. And this product, Kavo, from a company called Kavo Inc., demonstrated for the first time publicly what they've been working on. And what they've been working on is pretty amazing. What they've been working on is something that's going to pull together all of your set-top box stuff, the content from your DVR, from your Roku, from your game system. So let's say that you have a bunch of apps on your game system that let you get to your streaming content, and it's going to pull it all into one experience with one remote that integrates all of your services. All of your services. If you have Apple TV, you know what I'm talking about when I discuss the frustration of not being able to integrate all of your services into one box. Because iTunes and Amazon, yeah, they don't play nice together. You don't get those on one thing. And pretty much iTunes and any of the cable boxes out there, nope, they don't work together. And let's say iTunes and any of your TVs, yep, not there either. Are you sensing a theme here? The big missing piece here is the content available from iTunes, as well as all of those services that may be spread across different devices. And what Kavo has done is they've come up with a way of using a combination of CEC and infrared and IP control to basically act as a big smart HDMI switch. But that switch is also aware of all the accounts you have on all of your services. So it knows what you've most recently watched on all of your services. And it knows which box you have supports which services. And with their remote, you can request through voice, or you can use the remote to call up any particular show, and it's going to know which episode to play based on whatever you've watched, and it's going to know which device to change it to. And, oh, guess what? If you happen to pick up the remote for a particular device, like, say, your Roku, and use that, it's smart enough to know that you're using your Roku remote, and it's automatically going to switch everything to that. It's basically like the smartest universal remote system ever, but it's also content aware. Josh, I want this so bad.
So I'm glad you really did a good job of explaining this. I tried looking through this earlier and couldn't really get it. So the idea is I could sit down, I could grab the remote and say, I want to watch House of Cards.
Yep.
And this remote and box is going to, it's going to know, okay, House of Cards. I know what House of Cards is. It's only on Netflix. Which devices are plugged in that can play Netflix?
Yep.
Okay. HDMI 2 is an Xbox. So I'm going to switch to that. Is it going to open Netflix for me?
It's going to open Netflix, and it's going to start the most recent episode that you haven't yet watched.
That's kind of like magic.
That is kind of like magic. And this is what Apple is trying to do with their TV app, and they're not there yet because they don't have all the providers. So one of the things that's interesting here is that they're not necessarily beholden to the providers. They're using open APIs and IR and CEC to do all this, so that if there isn't an open API, like, for example, there isn't an open API to the Apple TV. So their solution for that is that they actually have a little app that runs on the Apple TV. And then app is what it calls. And that app makes the request to launch the Netflix app, if that happens to be where your Netflix is, or whatever streaming app it is that you're trying to access. So They've really used the technology available to them to make all of this work. Now, there's a couple caveats here. One is the price. This is going to cost $400, and it'll be available later this year in a very, very, very limited distribution of only 5,000 units.
Yikes.
Right. Now, they say that that's because they want to make sure that they get the experience right, so they're soft launching it to get feedback from their first users before they make it broadly available. I commend that. I think it's wonderful. I think more realistically, it's also a limitation of them being able to get physical hardware out this year. So, you know, I just want to call that what I think it is.
Yeah.
The other thing that you need to be aware of is that they're doing this through a very complex system of technology and interfaces and screen reading. Now, you may remember that we talked about Vizio TVs a couple weeks ago and how Vizio just got slapped by the courts for reading content off the screen and then selling the data that they got from that to providers. Now, they're not selling the data, but they are using what they're reading off of the TV to help them better understand what's happening on your screen so that they can control it better. I don't know how, I don't know why, but that's what they're doing. And supposedly it works pretty well for them. Now, this also means that if they're using this technology that requires a very specific knowledge of what's going on the interface on your TV, then any change to any of these systems, let's say Roku changes its interface, that could disrupt how this works until they manage to get an update in place, which means that they have kind of a promise to users when they buy this thing that they're going to keep it up to date as system changes occur over time. So there's a lot that makes this seem less ideal from a go-to-market perspective, but from a technology and user experience perspective, I think this has a lot of promise.
So I want to take one step back. I'm not sure if you mentioned this already or because there was a lot in there. What about live TV? Like if I want to say, watch the Lions game, does it know what my TV provider is and how to switch my cable box and all that stuff?
This is where I throw cold water on this. As best I can tell, I don't think they have a solution for live TV yet. That really would be the panacea, right? Like nobody's been able to figure out how to combine well the live TV content and the streaming content. This, as best I can tell, is really focused on the streaming content, not the live content. But
I don't know how you can charge $400 for this without it covering everything. $400 is so much money.
It is so much money, but think of it as a universal remote. Now, this doesn't mean
Harmony controls a cable box.
Yeah, this can control your cable box. This will be able to control your cable box. You'll be able to switch to the cable box and watch live TV. What it doesn't say that it's capable of doing right now is being content aware for the live content. And I'm okay with that. That's something that in theory they could add. That's data and software.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely something they could add, but that's a hard add.
It is a hard add, but as long as I still have access to that box and I can still use that box, then that's not a problem for me at all.
Yeah, like for cord cutters, I think this makes a lot of sense. But for a lot of people, their primary TV, I think, is still their pay TV provider. And all of that over-the-top stuff is secondary. And for them to pay $400 for smart control over that, they're going to want it to control everything, I think.
Yep, very likely. I mean, the price is high for most consumers. The price is on par with the manufacturer's suggested retail price for a Harmony Elite, right?
Yeah.
And the only thing it's going to do is control your live TV experience, but it sure does a whole lot more than the Elite does in terms of being able to help you find content, because there's no such capability on the Elite product.
I know that this isn't the focus of this show. You've got another show for this, but for that price, will it also control smart devices around the house? Because Harmonies do.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't currently have any capability along those lines, but again, it's software. So they could, if that's something that they wanted to do.
Well, but some of that requires some hardware sometimes, depending on how it works. But like, if I could grab this, like imagine this, you grab the remote and you say, Netflix and chill. And it turns down your lights and it opens up whatever show you're binging on Netflix. Like, how perfect would that be?
Yep. I agree. I agree completely. I mean, they could definitely incorporate capabilities like that in the way that Harmony does it without having to buy their additional home bridge is by leveraging the APIs over the cloud that many of these home automation systems make available.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, it's something we'll have to watch. It's scheduled to come out. Well, they're saying they're launching in June, but it will ship in September. I don't really know what that launch date means then, because as far as I'm concerned, that means September.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at this as a startup / CES / crowdfund, it's not crowdfunded, but if you look at it as one of those types of events.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new consumer electronic, a brand new consumer electronic device. Most of these types of devices don't have a great track record of launching on the day they hope that they will.
Right. So I'm betting 2018.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. All right, Richard, I think that wraps up our news for this week. As usual, there's always a lot going on, at least in your entertainment center. So why don't you get us started on what you've been doing?
Yeah, so I have been doing a little bit more configuration of my system. One of the things that I wanted to note, I had mentioned that I had been spending, I had spent a bunch of time working on getting my music library updated. And one of the things that I learned, and I'm kind of amazed by this, is that when you link your Sonos account to your iTunes library properly, and by properly, I mean not just to where your iTunes content is stored, but actually following the directions on Sonos's support site, then Sonos also is aware of your playlists that you have in iTunes. And one of the things that I have found amazing is that Sonos will actually make available all of your playlists, including your automatic playlists. So these are playlists that aren't dictated by you dragging songs into them, but by rules. And what Sonos does is every night it refreshes the playlist using the rules to make sure that you have the latest and greatest songs that meet the rule criteria available to you through Sonos. Pretty cool. And I had no idea that that was even possible.
Hmm. That's really cool.
Now, I've also been continuing my efforts to get my TV series DVDs onto my Plex server. And one of the things that I learned recently about Plex is that there's this concept of a season zero on TV series. Did you know of this? Are you aware of TV season zero?
Yes, but only recently, and maybe for the same reason as you. Battlestar Galactica's miniseries thing.
Yeah. So Battlestar Galactica is a great example, because Battlestar Galactica is one of these shows that it's a TV show, but it also had a miniseries and it had special movies associated with it that were part of the canon, but were not part of the actual TV episodes. And so to account for this, Plex has this concept of TV season zero for all of the specials that might be associated with a TV show. So I've been able to incorporate all of those specials now into my series library for Battlestar Galactica and a bunch of other episodes, or rather a bunch of other series that I have. That's a really cool capability. The other thing that it does is it allows you to incorporate TV show extras. And you're like, TV show extras? What's a TV show extra? Well, on the DVDs, a lot of times there are extras that you may want to include as content that you can watch through Plex. But while Plex supports extras for movies, it does not support the concept of extras for a TV show. So they just don't end up showing up anywhere. And it turns out that they too can be included in season zero. And probably more importantly, it turns out that somewhere there's an official numbering scheme for this stuff. Now, I don't know who decides this, but I found a website called episodedata.com that for many, many US shows actually identifies what the episode number would be for any given extra on a disc in season zero. Awesome stuff.
This is really, really cool, Richard. And for a series like Battlestar Galactica is really, really nice. Because even if you know about season zero, that's not always enough. Because, okay, the miniseries, that's not hard. It's at the very beginning of the series, so it's going to be season zero, episode one and two. But what about Razor? Well, that's episode four.
Right.
All of that stuff gets really complicated. I was really excited when you put this in here because I'm actually struggling with this right now with one show. I bought the biggest thing that my daughter was mad about when I cut cable was we didn't have Disney anymore. And she was right in the middle of watching a Disney show called Liv and Maddie. I don't know if Disney's just weird, but for some reason, I went and bought this on Amazon this week. And then I used PlayOn to record them so that I could just throw them all on Plex. And for some reason, like, it comes across on Amazon as like Liv and Maddie Cali style season 107, which doesn't make any sense because it's season four. Like, I don't get it. And I tried naming it and numbering it the way that I thought it would make sense, and it totally isn't working. And so I thought, here is my savior. And unfortunately, that show's not on there. So I don't know. Yeah. I still don't know what to call these things to make them work appropriately. But the site's still really awesome.
Yeah, there's limited content there, but I found most of the shows that I needed to find season zero data for. Now, the one thing that I noticed is that it didn't have, for example, some BBC shows. It didn't have Absolutely Fabulous, but it did have Torchwood, which is a BBC show. So I'm not really sure what qualifies and what doesn't. And if you ever take a look at this, I mean, this is literally a database dump. There's no website styling going on here. It is raw data coming out of a database.
And it's not just new stuff either. Like the TV show Chips is in here from 1977, guys. So it's not just new stuff.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I actually found this when I was trying to get some clarification on episode data for a series from the 90s called Wise Guy. I don't know if people even remember that.
Nope. The other thing that I should point out is it looks like when you first get to it that this site is in alphabetical order, but at some point it stops being in alphabetical order. So don't just scroll. Use your browser's
search
or yeah. Find feature.
Good point. Definitely search. Yep. All right. Well, another thing that I did recently in Plex was that, and I don't know why I didn't do this before, since I've been spending less and less time on my media center and more time in Plex, I finally decided to add my recordings folders, and yes, I have multiple, to the recordings library that I created in Plex. I don't know why I didn't do this before, Josh. This makes all the difference in the world. Now, one of the things that I noticed was that when I first added it, none of the shows showed up. So what I had to do was I created folders for each of the series, not the seasons, but I created a folder, for example, for NCIS Los Angeles, and I created a folder for Once Upon a Time, and I created et cetera, et cetera. And then put all of the episodes for that show in that folder. And then suddenly they showed up and it was able to read the information either. I don't know if it was actually getting the metadata from the file itself or just figuring it out from the file name, but it got all the episodes right. It just has to somehow be identified as part of a series. Now, obviously Media Center doesn't do this natively, but right now I'm not recording in Media Center. If you were recording in Media Center, you could use something like MCE Buddy to automatically move a file once it's finished recording to a folder named after its series name, if that's something you wanted to do. So if you're looking at a way of getting your Media Center recordings onto your Plex library, this may be a good way to do it. All right. Also, I have not generally used the HD Home Run app a whole lot. And I think I mentioned to you, Josh, that the reason for this was that I wasn't getting any guide data.
That would make it difficult.
And I figured that that was just a problem with my provider. Well, as soon as the folks at Silicon Dust enabled the ability to stream protected content, boom, now I have data for everything. I had data for nothing before. Now I have data for everything. So I don't know what that's about, but if anybody else was experiencing the same problem and maybe as a result decided that they weren't going to use HD Home Run for live TV, they may want to go back and check it out again because now it's actually pretty nice with, you know, guide data and all.
Yeah, it's a lot better when everything works appropriately.
All right. Now, what have I been watching? The usual stuff. You know, I've been keeping up with the usual shows that I've been watching. I started a new thing called Horace and Pete, and I don't know if anybody is familiar with this. This is something that the guys on Cord Killers talked about a year ago, actually. It is a Louis C.K. buy it online and download uncopy protected versions, and I trust you to not share it kind of thing. So essentially, I would describe this thing as a play that they recorded so that they could release it on video. And that doesn't make it bad. It's actually one of these things that comes across as each scene being a one take. It may be multi-camera. I don't know if it's a one camera or multi-camera. It is multi-camera now that I think about it. But it comes across as if it is being performed as a play. And I have to tell you, you know, I don't really watch much stuff from Louis C.K. except maybe his occasional stand-up stuff. He's a damn good actor.
I've never watched anything of his. That won't surprise you because I'm like the anti-comedy guy here. But
well, and this is by no means a comedy. This is like a harsh reality drama kind of thing with comedic moments. But the cast is amazing. It has Steve Buscemi. It has Alan Alda. It has the woman, I wish I could remember her name, who played Roseanne's sister. It has a whole bunch of actors that people would recognize immediately. And it is good. It is serious. It is not family friendly, but something that's worth looking into. I have also, and don't make fun of me, because every once in a while I have one of those shows that people might make fun of me about. I got back to watching Gilmore Girls.
Richard, nothing surprises me with you anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, Gilmore Girls is one of these series that, like Aaron Sorkin shows, has amazing writing. And the dialogue that people have is completely unrealistic because it is so snappy and on and just unrelenting that you wonder how they actually managed to film this, let alone, you know, assume that people don't actually talk this way. But really, in, you know, fun, nice show, definitely family friendly. And as many people probably know, Netflix had a series of Gilmore Girls specials to kind of wrap up the series, since the showrunner never got the opportunity to close out the series the way she wanted to. And I wanted to watch them, but I wanted to refresh myself on what was going on because I had kind of lost steam while I was watching this. So I'm back into that now. And two movies I watched this weekend. I watched Steve Jobs talking about Aaron Sorkin, and Aaron Sorkin Property had tons of the walk and talk stuff going on. And for that, I liked it. Fassbender did a really good job of acting, and there were some seriously good moments in this film, but I can't help but wish that it was Christian Bale in that role because he would have been perfect and he would have actually looked like Steve Jobs, with which Fassbender looks nothing like. And I also watched The Legend of Tarzan, which is the new Tarzan movie, and it got panned by the press. User reviews are a little bit better, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. And I think the thing that I liked about it was that it does a really good job of telling the story of the Tarzan mythology without spending the whole movie doing it.
Mm.
So definitely, I think, worth a watch if it comes to cable and you have it, or if you can rent it. I bought it and I'll watch it again. I thought it was good. So that's pretty much what I have been doing in my entertainment center. Long-winded, I know, but Josh, how about you?
You know, it's okay when you go a little bit long-winded, because there are times like this week where I've got almost nothing to talk about. I watched zero TV outside of some, like, a part of a Penguins hockey game. I really don't think I watched anything else. No TV, no movies, nothing. And not even... I didn't really have anything interesting going on in terms of video games. It was more of just the usual stuff. Overwatch and NHL 17. So Overwatch had a big Chinese New Year thing going on for the last couple of weeks. So I was trying to get Chinese New Year related things for my characters in that game. And then just hockey. So I'm really boring this week, outside of using Play On to record an Amazon purchased season of a Disney show for my 8-year-old. That's not super exciting. So if anyone hearing this figures out or knows, because maybe they've got Liv and Maddie recorded and knows how I should be properly naming the title and season of the, you know, season, the proper season 4 of this Liv and Maddie show, I would really, really appreciate some tips here, because it shows up in Plex, but I get no posters, I get no metadata at all. So, I mean, it's good enough for my 8-year-old. She doesn't really care, but it bothers me. Like, I gotta have that artwork, you know, because it looks weird without the artwork. So I gotta figure that out. I did kind of make sure that all of my HD home run recording stuff was working. I don't record a lot of TV because we just don't watch a ton. But I've been making sure to like record the Sunday morning news shows and maybe watching those instead of just listening to the podcast versions of those, and just trying to keep an eye on them to keep a general eye on the stability of the HD home run DVR stuff. And all of that's been working really well. All of it running right on my NVIDIA Shield TV box. So there, I guess I made that a little bit more interesting than I originally thought my section would be.
All right. Well, that's pretty much it for this episode.
That is. We have no announcements except to say that the next couple weeks are weird, guys. We don't really know what, like, I think next week will be fine. Next week is episode 399. It'll probably be pretty normal. I think we're going to record on Tuesday night like usual. The following week, you know, the one where we would have big show 400, not happening. Richard and I are both traveling that week. We're not recording the show that week. So it'll be 1 week delayed before you get the not so special, because I doubt we're going to do anything special for it, episode 400.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to be on it at least.
Oh, yeah. You definitely have to be on it. So that'll be in a couple of weeks. So while you won't have a show in 2 weeks, we will be here next week. We're always available for you guys to talk with us, though. We're on Twitter. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. The website is DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I, MediaZone. And like Richard pointed out at the beginning of the show, our direct message box is open. Anybody can direct message us on Twitter. That can be kind of scary at times, but no one's abused it yet. So if you're all about Twitter and you just want to send us a DM, that's totally fine, even if we're not following you, because sometimes we're not great at following back. So shoot us a DM. We'll definitely get those. We're on Facebook too, at facebook.com/thedmz. There's Google Plus. There's the email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And, you know, if you like listening to podcasts, well, Richard's got another really great one that you can listen to. It's about home automation and control news. What's going on with Home On, Richard?
Next episode up is the long-awaited episode with James Montemagno, where we talk about Google Home. I also have some stuff in the works that I'm really excited about. I mentioned that I was going to be meeting with Inova. That didn't happen my last trip out west, but it should hopefully happen in a couple of weeks. And I have a really, really big guest coming on soon that I'm very excited about. I will not announce it until it's locked in, though.
Ooh, teasers. Guys, I don't even know who it is. Like Richard normally tells me, I don't even know who it is. That's not fair. I might need to hold him after the show to find out. I will remotely twist his arm until he says uncle and tells me who it is. All right. Well, or maybe I'll wait until the live show next week. And that's why you should come to the live show next week. We do this usually Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes it changes, though. So follow us on Twitter and you'll know for sure when we're going to be recording the show live. There's a chat room over there for you to participate and chat right back with us. And we love having you. So come back and chat with us live while we record the show. If that doesn't work for you, that's okay. You can always subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Yeah, every place, guys. But if you really like us and you really want to help us out, the best way you can do that, leave us a rating or a review over at iTunes. We really, really appreciate the few moments of your time to do that for us. It helps us a ton. But that's going to do it for episode 398. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 399. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.